Hi, and welcome to Divine Manifesting. I am absolutely so excited because I have a new co-host that's joining me, and this woman has literally been the single best influence in my life. I remember the first day I met her, I walked into her office, and I just saw this amazing aura of light all around her, and literally my life has changed so much from knowing her for 10 years. I can't believe it's been 10 years. And she is just a fabulous marriage and family therapist. She is a therapist in the San Francisco Bay Area. And she has such a unique approach to being a therapist. She doesn't just, do what most therapists do. She is really brings in the spiritual aspect of being a therapist and really helps you move at an energetic level. And she is just absolutely amazing in manifesting and helping you create the life you want, because she certainly has helped me. She's not only, she in the past is my therapist, but she's now my dear, dear friend. She's my soul sister, and she is my co-author on our book on female competition, and I'd like to welcome Rebecca Grotto.
Well, thank you. I can't talk now that you've got me crying. Back at you, Christy. Thank you so much. First of all, my gosh, that was just an amazing introduction. But I guess I have to say, back at you, girl, back at you, sister, because I must be magnetizing through my power of deliberate intention and the law of attraction. I think I just magnetized back to me an incredible being in my life, and that is you. So thank you, Christy. That was just an amazing introduction, and I'm so excited to be part of this program and co-hosting with you, especially because the subject is such an incredibly exciting subject to me. So I'm so excited to be here with you talking about my favorite subject, law of attraction and deliberate creating.
Well, I'm so glad that we're going to be doing this together, because Rebecca and I get on this kick where we create a lot together, and we're working on our book, and we get on the phone and we talk for hours, and it's like I wish I could record some of the conversations that we have, because we get very deep in our conversations. And so we just felt it would be best to do a radio show like this and talk about what we talk about and really help people get to that next place in their lives, release resistance, to really be able to manage that little voice that kind of tells you, to have fear and to worry and that kind of stuff. And she just has amazing techniques that have helped me through the years. And, we've gotten to a place where we really help each other. So our goal is to help all the listeners and help you move to whatever it is you want to create, whether it's a better body, a better relationship, attracting your soul relationship to you, creating a different career, a more fulfilling career, or just plain making more money or get a promotion or whatever it is, or just being in a place of feeling peaceful and happy in your life. And,
maybe that your life is just going fine, but you just want a little more ease and effortlessness, or just a little more joy. Who can't have more joy in their life?
Absolutely.
Who can't have a little more laughter? So I'm sorry, to cut you off, but it's exactly that. Some people feel that they really, truly have everything they want right now in terms of a great family, a really good career, et cetera. But who can't have more joy and more contentment and more peace of mind in their life? And that's what this is about.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm thankful that you brought that up, because a lot of times with The Secret, especially, people give criticism to the book or, the movie that, it seems like it's all about the material stuff. And truly, I don't think that's the intention of what any of these authors put in that book or in the movie, because it really is about a spiritual path. It's about who we become on our way to creating those things. And, it's really becoming peaceful and happy with where you are in the moment and just being happy with what you have in your life now.
Exactly.
So thank you for bringing that up.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, one of the laws I wanted to talk to our audience today about was the law of deliberate creation. Last week when we started the show, we talked about the law of attraction, and that, of course, is everything that the secret is based on. And the second universal law is the law of deliberate creation, and that's really just an amazing, amazing law. The law of deliberate creation states that which I give thought to, I begin to attract. What I give thought to with emotion, I attract more quickly. So basically, when you are thinking of something, whether you're focused on it, whether you're imagining it, whether you're thinking about a past situation, whatever your focus is on, that is what you're attracting. And the difference between the law of attraction and the law of deliberate creation is that when you think about it, the law of attraction is like a boomerang. Whatever you give out with your energy vibrates, thoughts, feelings, etc., and you will get that back to you. The law of deliberate creation is offering a vibration knowingly so that you don't create by default. Most of the time, unless you're aware of these laws, you're offering a vibration unknowingly, and you create that by default. So if you are witnessing something that makes you unhappy, or you're thinking of something that makes you happy, either way, you are creating. It's just where your focus, where your attention is what we are actually, that's how we're offering that vibration.
I actually see that as a humanity, we're starting to grow up. We're starting to mature. We're back in the day. We would just accept what was given to us. In other words, we didn't take responsibility for what we were creating. And to me, that's just sort of called the game of being a victim. You know, we sort of ended up with certain things, good or bad, and then we felt like, we weren't responsible for any of that. And I really see us now as sort of a collective consciousness moving towards this thing called taking responsibility for that which you're seeing in your reality, that which you're creating. And so I think with that comes a lot of resistance because a lot of us aren't ready or don't want to take responsibility. You know, I did not create this mess that I call my life. I did not create this stuff. I'd rather see myself as a victim of it. But I think that as we start moving through that resistance, and that's what I think Christy as a coach and myself as a therapist, we're really good at getting people to move through that resistance and recognize that whether you acknowledge that you're in charge of your life or not, you are.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a great point.
Yeah. And so I think that we are getting to that place, that we are starting to mature and take responsibility, become accountable for what we see. Whether we see glory in our life or messes,
Absolutely. We
are responsible for that. So, Absolutely.
Because basically the non-deliberate way is, you observe something that you either want or don't want. Say it's you're paying your bills and you're in debt. And when you're in that place, you're, of course, in a place of worry or fear. And when you offer that vibration, you are offering, that the universe basically, or the law of attraction, responds to that vibration and gives you more of the same. So to Rebecca's point, I love taking responsibility for what is in my outer reality because I know that I was the one that created it. So if something happens and there's just a huge mess in my life of something, or, my life, when you work with the universal laws, it just flows with ease and effortlessness. And I find that when I'm bumping up against something and just something is not flowing, I need to take a step back because it's me that's getting in my own way. And when you can look at your life that way and realize that this isn't flowing for some reason and where am I playing a role in this, you are able to take a step back and change your thinking, change your beliefs, maybe, change your thoughts. And it really changes your life. It changes the outer circumstances.
And if I may interject for a second, Christy, for all the callers, or for all the people listening, you are an amazing person to me because you are an example of somebody who takes full responsibility for what they are experiencing in their life. I just never cease to be amazed by you.
Well, thank you.
Even when you're calling going, what the heck is going on here? Oh, hell no. Even though you are there, you are taking full responsibility for what did I do and how do I change this. So I just really want to compliment you on that. You really impress me quite often with something that I see quite often in my practice is people love to take responsibility when their life is flowing and going well. I did this. Look what I created. But then when it comes to a grinding halt, they say, who did this to me? How is this happening? I did not create that. But I will say again, you are really an amazing person to me, and you impress me all the time because you really do take responsibility for when your life, 99 times out of 100 is flowing beautifully and you're just manifesting, everything you desire. But in that one time, that it's not, you really do step back, and you're a great example of that. So you don't just walk, talk the talk. You really do walk the walk, Christine.
Oh, well,
you do a great job.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Well, yeah, so a lot of times, and I know you get this a lot as far as, you know, being a therapist, and I know I get this a lot as being a coach, and, you know, especially now that I'm out speaking at the Learning Annexes talking about, you know, how to attract anyone or anything using law of attraction, people always ask me, well, how do you get rid of these negative thoughts? I mean, how do you, you know, how do you change your vibration if you are constantly feeling anger, if you're constantly feeling depressed? And, you know, I'm just going to throw that question out to you. What would you suggest to someone that comes to you and asks you that question?
Oh, that's a very good question, and that's one of the skills that I think I'm really good at.
Yes, you are. That's why I asked you that question.
Oh, it was such a setup. No, it's a really good question, and here's my real quick, short answer. I think that for most of us, we apply a negative connotation to certain emotions. And especially in our society, we really deny ourselves the ability to be angry, to be sad, to grieve, to mourn, to, you know, to just feel down in the dumps. And that, to me, that is part of the human experience. Mm-hmm. If you are on this earth living your life, you are not going to just experience joy and well-being and contentment every moment of the day. I just don't know who you are. I think even the gurus in the caves every now and then stub their toe. And you know, and so I think part of the human experience is to have our full range of emotions, and those include anger and sorrow and bitterness and grief and all of that. And so I think, but what happens for most of us is because we don't have permission, whether it's in our society or within ourselves, to experience that emotion and to acknowledge it, that doesn't mean that we have, you know, full permission to rant and rage and road rage at people and, you know, kick the dog. And, you know, it doesn't, that's not what I'm saying at all, but it is an acknowledgement that, I'm angry. Or, yeah, you know, wow, I'm really feeling sad. So I think part of the answer, the short answer to this is, once we can acknowledge our emotions, not act on them and not certainly fester in them, because that's not the goal either. The goal is to move through them really quickly, and how we do that is that we acknowledge them and we listen to them and we get the message that they're trying to tell us, so that if we're ignoring sorrow in our life or our feelings are hurt and we're ignoring that, they will only get louder and louder and louder. But when we listen to them during the whispers, during the first time they come up and we are very attuned to them, they will move through us very quickly. And so, you know, I supervise in an agency called Awakening, and it is an agency that explores living and dying and the grief process. And that is one of the first things we say in the process of grieving is, really experience the full range of emotion. That is what's going to move you through these quickly. And really the goal is, when you realize that you're creating through your emotions, it is to move through those lower vibration emotions very quickly and to not stay stuck in them. So unfortunately for many of us, when we haven't been trained to acknowledge our emotions or to affirm them so that they will move on, then they do stay stuck within us, and lo and behold, unbeknownst to us, we are attracting our life experiences from these stuck emotions.
Yeah, and thank you for mentioning that, because there's two things I wanted to say about that and just kind of ducktail what you're saying. When, you know, people now, most people, I should say, when they find themselves sad or depressed or even just down or in a low energy type of thing, they go to their physician, they say, I'm unmotivated, I can't seem to get my butt out of bed. So the physician automatically gives them an antidepressant medication. And, you know, coming from the pharmaceutical world, I saw where antidepressant medications are so overprescribed. I mean, granted, yes, and I will say, there are people that need to be on these medications because they have chemical imbalance and it does help them. But for the most part, these are people that, you know, just kind of get in a slump where they're just not happy in their lives. And there's a reason. Their emotions, like you said, we were born with our emotional guidance system. We were born with emotions, yes, to tell us something. And if we are taking a pill to mask what our emotions are telling us, we're not creating our lives in a different way. We're just masking it. And it's like we're putting a pill to kind of make us feel better, when all it's really doing is numbing what's really underneath. And you're still attracting from that perspective.
Yeah.
Even though even though you're depressed and you take a pill, you're still attracting from that low-level emotion of depression.
Exactly, because the pill isn't getting rid of depression. And here's something that people really do need to know about depression. Depression isn't an emotion. It is an experience. It's the suppression of emotions. So really what's happening when you're feeling low energy and all the symptoms of depression, what that simply means is you have been suppressing your sorrow and your grief and your sadness and your anger. You've been suppressing all of those emotions. And so when you take an antidepressant, all you're doing is suppressing the experience of suppressing the emotions. Follow me. It's really just stuffing it even deeper is the way I see it. You know, you may feel a little better and you may be able to get out of bed, but as you're saying, you really haven't solved the problem. And boy, aren't we masters of that in our society. Don't fix the problem. Just take a pill for it. Just do, you know, just mask it. So, and I think, again, what people really need to get is in the process of creating, boy, oh boy, are you hindering yourself.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and you're right. You know, it's like we're in a society that eats to mask problems, or we take drugs, or we smoke cigarettes, or we go shopping, or, you know, we do all these different things, anything to just avoid the pain. And the amazing thing is that when you can face that pain, that's when it goes away, because everything in the universe is energy. And so when you actually get in touch with that energy and face it, then it dissipates it.
Mm-hmm. You almost feel it say, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to me.
Yeah.
Now let's solve the problem together. And, and certainly not to say that the pain is fun, or, you know, or in any way enjoyable. But I think that, again, this falls into what I was saying, that we are sort of growing up as a collective consciousness. You know, it's not always fun. Don't we tell our children that? It's not always going to be fun out there. Sometimes you do the stuff that's not that fun. You know, sometimes you just have to go out there and do the work. And I think pain is something like that. It may not be a fun, enjoyable experience, but I think once you move into it, it is manageable. It is doable. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And another thing you said is, you know, I grew up with anger, and my way of being, kind of getting people out of my space, because I was a very, you know, sensitive person, sensitive being, and I still am.
You're beautiful.
But I would get very angry, and I saw the way, you know, family members dealt with anger, and they would explode, and their anger was very, very inappropriate. And so, you know, I grew up thinking that that's the way you express anger, but I knew that, I think at an emotional level or somewhere within my being, I knew that, exploding with my anger, or at least releasing my anger, felt good. So, you know, they even say that there's been studies that anger turned inwards has turned into cancer. It can, you know, be disease in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
certainly depression.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I would expel my anger, but I did it in a very inappropriate way because I just didn't know how to. And then for many years, I tried to just suppress my anger because of the fact that I was told that's wrong, you shouldn't have it, you know, you shouldn't explode like that. And, of course, I had seen, you know, family members do that, and I agreed that, it's totally inappropriate. It's, beyond what anybody deserves. And so I just suppressed it. But then when I came to learn that, you know what, anger is okay. If someone is pushing you beyond your boundaries, it's okay for you to feel angry. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way you express that anger that is the unhealthy, you know, way of doing it.
Exactly.
So, and of course you had a huge help in that and learning all of that. And
Thank you.
So what would you absolutely, Rebecca. What would you say to someone that is trying to express their emotions, and they've been so cut off and suppressed from their emotions for so long? How would you say that, what would be a good way to start opening those up?
I would say that it's through getting very quiet. And it's probably the thing we'll say, the action steps that we need to take in deliberate creating. It's the action steps we need to take in most things. It's really not getting caught up in the expression of them or in the, or venting them, which I think is very common, and sometimes that's good. But I really think it's about, again, the word acknowledging them. And how we acknowledge them is, you know, the first step, especially if we've been cut off from our emotions, is to learn to get quiet. It's you know, I hate to say this, it's the process of meditating. It's learning to get quiet with ourselves, even if that means 5 minutes a day, and really going inward. Most people feel their emotions in their gut. So it's really just sort of getting quiet and going inward. And it sounds so simple, but asking the question, what am I feeling? And, you know, the response may be, I don't know. I've been so cut off from my feelings for so long, I'm really not sure. But just by posing the question of, what am I feeling? You know, I am now starting to give myself permission to acknowledge whatever is there. After maybe 40, 50 years of saying, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet, I'm now starting to say, are you there? You know, what am I feeling? What is within me? What is there in my gut? And I think little by little, you will start to identify what you're feeling. You know, but I think for many of us, we feel numb for a while. Well, I don't know. I'm just cut off from my emotions. But I think that to just sit quietly and create a space for them to come out, they will begin slowly but surely to emerge. And then the next step is to trust them and to allow them to be such as they are. I think that what we most of us do is we go, okay, joy and happiness and contentment, come out. Oh, anger, stay back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did not invite you out. And that's not okay. I think we just need to, you know, call forth all of them. The great thing about emotions, though, that people really need to know is most emotions don't overtake us. Anger, sorrow, bitterness, they will not overtake us if we're really acknowledging them. They just go crazy when they've been held back for a long time, or when we've gotten into bad habits of, you know, going from zero to, you know, on fire. And we can get into those bad habits, but when we start to really train ourselves to listen to our emotions and recognize that I'm really angry, you know, that person was rude to me, or I'm really hurt that person, you know, was talking behind my back, that's hurtful, then we really just become, again, mature. We can acknowledge our emotions without having to let them run wild. So I guess the first step I would have people do, if they're really interested in getting in touch with their emotions, and hopefully for the purpose of, you know, becoming a deliberate creator, is to spend time, 5 minutes a day, quietly going within and becoming like a little explorer. What's in there? You know, I wonder what's there. And then accepting whatever comes up without judgment.
Yeah, absolutely. Our both Rebecca and I have the same amazing light body instructor. And light body, for those of you that don't know, and most don't, it's a really intense meditation program that really focuses on harmonizing and balancing the energy centers that are in the body, as well as creating emotional flow and physical vitality. So I know for me this was a huge step in my releasing my emotional stuff, if you will, really got me to the next level. But our light body instructor, what did she used to say? It was getting, allowing the emotions, you know, arising above the emotions and not allowing the emotions to take over. And you had said it best today, and if you want to just describe what you said about a wave.
Yeah, I think the word I use a lot is being senior to our thoughts and being senior to our emotions. And what that really means is that our thoughts will be there such as they will be, and our emotions will be there such as they are. When we're senior to them, they will come in and we will be above them. We will be sort of on top of our game. They will come in, we will recognize them, we will acknowledge them, but we won't necessarily need to act on them. We won't get caught up in the tumultuousness of those emotions. I mean, oftentimes I think about, I'm a Southern California girl, grew up, you know, near the beaches and, you know, spent quite a bit of time getting tossed and turned in the waves while attempting to body surf. But there were so many times where I felt like it was so much fun riding those waves and being on top of them and feeling like I was, you know, mastering it, these waves and controlling where I was going to go with my little boogie board. There were other times where a wave would come in, and anybody who has ever been just tossed around in an ocean knows that feeling of not knowing which way is up, which way is down. You just feel like you're in a washing machine. And so oftentimes I think of being on top of emotions or being underneath them in that way. when we're on top of them, there's a level of mastery. There's a level of acknowledging the strength of the wave or emotion, the direction that it's pulling us. And then there's other times where we go under it, and it's tumultuous. It just knocks us all around. And, you know, we come crawling out of that ocean going, oh, dear Lord, where have I just been? So I think the goal is to be able to experience our emotions enough to become, you know, again, senior to them so that we have this level of mastery. And that doesn't mean that we're suppressing them. That doesn't mean that we're disconnected from them. We're certainly there working with them, but we're on top of them. And then there'll be plenty of other times. So, you know, we will go underneath them. The goal is then to get up and out of them, you know, so that we can sort of right ourselves and then, you know, have fun instead of being tossed and turned all over the place. Is that what you were talking about, by the way?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, and talking about that, if to talk to our listeners about, you know, the book that we're writing and that we have been writing, and for those of you that want to get a advanced copy of it, you can email me at Christy@ChristyWhitman.com. It's called The Fairest One of All, and it's about female competition. And we can talk about that briefly, how we came to write this book together and really what it's about. But during the process, it's like to make any type of lasting change in your life, we've discovered that there's a three-step process. And, you know, what we've been talking about is, you know, the first part of that three-step process, and that's recognizing. You need to recognize what your emotions are. And like you had been saying, you know, allow yourself to become aware of it.
Mm-hmm. And when we're suppressing, we're really not getting rid of them. We're just failing to recognize what is already there. And so this three-step process is really, you know, just so key in manifesting all that you desire. Because the first step is really recognizing what is there, good, bad, you know, ugly, wonderful. And I think, you know, one of the biggest forces that I've seen in my life and is the force of competition. And I think we're really trained and taught to embrace competition. But really what it does is it has so many more downsides to it than it does upsides in terms of our ability to create. And so, you know, Christy and I started to realize, you know, a few years back how very, very devastating the emotions resulting from female competition were to us and how they were getting in the way, unbeknownst to us, really, especially for me, because I would have been the first person to tell you, oh, yes, I don't do female competition. I remember Christy calling me on that quite a bit. It was like, oh, yeah, I'm really well aware of competition, but I just don't go there. And really, what I have come to find out is that has so been a part of my life, and it has really attached itself to certain emotions that I have, like feeling inadequate or feeling, you know, depressed. Feeling apathetic when I don't feel like I can keep up with other women, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And these emotions were sort of underground, undercover. And by being able to recognize them, I've been able to bring them to the surface so that they may be released, so they don't have to be part of my attracting process. Yeah, I really didn't want those things drawing to me life experiences. And now I realize through this process of recognizing that they really were attracting circumstances in my life that weren't the best, weren't so healthy, and certainly didn't make me happy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that most people don't realize what, you know, they're not aware of just even something as like envy and jealousy. And, you know, what we call female competition is having, best way I can describe it, and maybe you can describe it differently, is when you have you know, you're feeling really good about yourself. You're feeling successful. You're feeling like maybe your body's the way you want it to be. You look nice. You know, maybe you're having success at work. And then all of a sudden you see another woman that is just drop dead gorgeous, or this person is just really has, you know, something inside of them that's full of life, or they're very successful, or whatever it is, and then you start feeling badly about yourself. You start cutting yourself down. And within you, there's a shift. You go from this, like, joyful happiness, you know, I'm enough kind of abundant space, to feeling like, oh, just deflated and defeated,
because you're not enough, because what you're doing is looking at this woman and comparing yourself and doing like a scorecard in your head. Well, God, her clothes are better than mine. She's thinner than I am. She's at a better high-paying job than I am. And we start doing the scorecard, and we start like shrinking at each comparative thought that we have. We shrink.
Mm-hmm.
And there's either two ways you can go. You either shrink and you feel badly about yourself, or it's like, oh, okay, I got to win. And then you go into this like anxious, I'm going to, like a fight mode where you're going to then, outdo this other woman, or that it becomes your life goal, if you will, or your motivation behind improving your life.
Exactly.
And I know I was very much in a place that I had no idea, like Rebecca was saying. If you were to ask me, if you were to say female competition, what's that? I mean, that's something that, I'm a very spiritual person. I'm a law of attraction coach. I mean, there's no way that I would have competition with other females, and I just never thought that was the case until I became very, very aware of it, and that's why Rebecca and I decided to write this book together. I'll tell a quick story. I was in a place where I was feeling really good about myself. I had just created my dream home. The relationship that I was in, it was really, we were in a really good place. I had just amazing success at the time. Now I own my own business, and I'm, a law of attraction coach and a speaker and an author. At the time, I was a pharmaceutical rep, and I was having great success in the company. I was one of the number one reps in the company. So I was in a place where I was eating well and, working out, so I felt really good about my body. And I was driving to a training I was living in Northern California at the time, and I was driving to Napa for this training, which I was so excited because I love Napa, and I was going to be spending a week with a couple of girls that had been at other training classes, and we really connected and really enjoyed being around each other. And I walked into the hotel to meet everybody, and everybody was hovered around this one girl named Susan. And she had this huge, like, 3.5-carat diamond ring. And at the time, I was married, and I had, a 1.5-carat diamond ring, and it was beautiful, and I had always loved it. And I saw her ring and all the attention that she was getting from all of our other friends, and they were just, like, oohing and aahing and, just going crazy over her. And I just started to shrink. Like, I couldn't believe it. Now, to tell this story, Rebecca, it's just so silly for me because I'm like, I can't believe that happened to me. But I literally just got so depressed. I went up inside in my room, and I just started crying. And I told my husband at the time, I want a bigger ring. And, of course, that just crushed him because it was, here it was like he had really spent a lot of money on the ring that he gave me, plus he had a design for me. It had totally hurt him. So then it ends up affecting my relationship with him. And I called Rebecca just in tears, crying. And when she had said, this is female competition, you're comparing your ring size to another woman's ring size and making it mean something about yourself. And it just hit me. And when I became aware of that and recognized that, T. Harv Eckert says this all the time, what you do in one area of your life, you do in all areas of your life. So once that egg got cracked, I mean, it was just, wow. I realized all the different places in my life that I do that, that I did that, I should say.
Yeah.
So we decided to write this book together to really be able to transform this competitive mind, this comparing mind that a lot of women do, and they don't even realize that they're doing it. And that is the thing that is preventing them from creating what they desire. Because when you are in a place of feeling envious, when you're in a place of feeling jealous, when you're comparing and you're not feeling good enough, that is, in fact, what you're sending out to the universe, and that is what you're attracting back to yourself.
Exactly. It's as if you've accepted this illusion about yourself, that you're not enough. And it sort of stays hidden in there, buried, and it just takes some other woman who looks wonderful, who's vibrating in success and prosperity or whatever she's vibrating in. It just takes her to illuminate within us that feeling of lack. And so the beauty about this is that when you can recognize that that is within you, it doesn't mean you're creating that lack within you. It's already been within. It's already there. It's been in there, festering and attracting. And, and so really, once you can recognize what was already in there, just as within your story, Christy, her diamond ring didn't create female competition with you. It just illuminated what was already there within.
Absolutely.
And because you are on your path to, becoming just an amazing spirit and getting rid of anything that's getting in your way from showing you that you are that amazing spirit. I think it is because you were on your spiritual path that you illuminated what was already within you. And that gave you the opportunity to release it, to start letting go. So once you recognize it, you can release it and what's left, but to reclaim what is naturally there, our true essence, which is divine and perfect and whole and complete. There is no lack. And from there, and the more we do that, the more we are then attracting to us all that we desire. But I think the funny thing is, as you were talking, you know, what competition does too is it takes us from thinking and feeling and focusing on what we want, the truth of who we are. So here you showed up to, you know, this conference in Napa just full of yourself, full of, you know, feeling so good about yourself, feeling so excited and anticipating this wonderful week with your friends, focusing on all the things that you desired and getting ready to call them in. And then what competition did was it shifted your focus. It canceled all of those things that you were attracting to yourself, all those wonderful things, by then getting you to think of all the things you were not.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? It's like,
yeah.
I was so happy before with that beautiful diamond ring. And, you know, and I remember you telling me the story, and you were just so high driving down there with the, you know, with a top down, and you were singing at the top of your lungs, and you were so happy. And what competition did is it turned you from that space, from attracting all these wonderful things into your life. It got you to focus on, my ring isn't big enough, you know, my life isn't good enough, I'm just down in the dumps, and now it's canceling all those, you know, it's almost like saying put a stop to that beautiful order you just put out to the universe, and now let's start ordering up some real, you know, negative stuff in your life. So I think that's the real tragic part about the competition or any energy within us that is, you know, that is really just drawing to us low life experiences, struggle, suffering. You know, that's the thing that really just is so tragic. Yeah.
Absolutely, and it's like you said, it's just, it's the focus. You know, we started this program today talking about it's where you put your focus, where you put your attention. So my mind, and you're absolutely right, Rebecca, it wasn't the diamond ring that all of a sudden created this competition in me. It was already in me. It just illuminated. It just brought it out, and I'm glad it did. I'm really grateful for that time in my life because it was when I was recognizing it in every area. I mean, from a girlfriend calling and saying she was pregnant when I was having a hard time getting pregnant, that brought up a lot of competition in me, to, you know, friends going on vacation and, you know, different things like that. There were different things that just all of a sudden would push my buttons that were all in the whole entire realm of female competition. And I'm so glad it did, because I literally was able to transform it. And amazing things happen, too. When you release that from your life, when you release that from your consciousness and you come back to the truth that we all are abundant, and because I am a successful woman or because I am in a really good place and because I'm creating all that I desire, it doesn't mean that when another woman comes in my space or comes in, you know, in my presence, that she's going to take away what I have. She gets to create her own life experience. She gets to have her success. She gets to have her beauty. She gets to run her goddess energy, and I get to run mine too. It doesn't take away. There's no limit. There's no, like, separation, like there's a piece of a pie, you know, like, uh-oh, she's taking my piece of the pie. That's not how it works. The
exactly.
Universe is absolutely abundant, and that's just it, is that whatever you put your focus on, whatever you are putting your attention on, that is what is going to expand. And so that's why it's so important. I mean, you know, even my first book, Perfect Pictures, is the same type of thing. It's focusing on what's wrong. Everything would be perfect if it wasn't for that, just that one thing.
Right.
You know, you could have a great body, but oh my gosh, you know, this is wrong. And so many of us do that. We find flaws with our own bodies, and we focus on that one, you know, maybe dimple at the back of our thigh, and that's what we focus upon. And guess what? If you keep focusing on that, what are you going to get? You're going to get
more dimples.
Yeah. Exactly.
Lots more.
Yeah. All over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's just, that's the way it works. So it doesn't matter if you're talking about success in your career or, even in your relationships or your body, whatever you focus your attention on, you that's what's going to expand. And so that's why it's so important to become a deliberate creator and really being deliberate. And when we say deliberate creator, it's being deliberate in the thoughts that you allow into your mind. You had said something today which was just brilliant, what you said about the kids in the car.
Oh, yes, earlier. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think part of being a deliberate creator is really starting to pay mind to our thoughts and emotions. And I think when we think about our thoughts, they're just way too fast. They're coming at us way too fast, and there are too many of them to keep track of. But, you know, and that's why we've been spending so much time, both Christy and I, talking about emotions, because trying to keep track of our thoughts is... it's just too overwhelming. But what we can keep track of is our emotions as an emotional guidance system. Emotions are slower paced. They're going to set themselves up, and then you can feel them, and they're going to trigger you to know what... If you're questioning what you're thinking, go to your feelings. Your feelings will tell you if you're thinking high energy, high vibration thoughts, or if you're thinking lower, negative, self-deprecating thoughts. So... what I was saying to Christy earlier today about our thoughts, oftentimes because they're coming so fast, we tend to shut them down. We don't stop and decipher each thought. We don't watch each thought set itself up and then move away. They're just coming at us so quickly that it reminded me of a time when my kids were little and they'd be in the back seat of the minivan and they were just chattering, 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 and I'd be every now and then going, mm-hmm, oh, yeah, that's great, oh, yeah, uh-huh, uh-huh. I wasn't listening to them. I really didn't care what they were saying, and that's the truth. But every now and then I'd be a good mom, and I'd go, oh, yeah, that's really funny, honey. But I wasn't listening, nor was I paying attention, and I think that's oftentimes what we do. And part of the game is to start really taking little snapshots. First of all, I think it's listening to our emotions, and then it's also about taking little snapshots, and that's what I would do with the kids in the car, too. I'd be thinking my own thoughts, but every now and then I would just tune into what they were saying, and then I'd give a good job, or, yeah, you're right, honey. And I would take a little snapshot of what the heck are they saying? What were they talking about? I think we can do that with our thoughts, too. We don't want to listen to every single one of them. But every now and then we can take a little snapshot and go, what am I thinking? What was that thought? What am I saying to myself? Did I just call myself fat in the space? Did I really go there? Or did I just hear myself say I was so pretty? You know, that's a great, I'm going to build that thought up. I'm going to follow that thought. Or I'm going to really cancel this other thought and shift it into a higher vibration thought. So, I wanted to back up too, Christy, because you said something really important that I wanted to be clear on. You opened up the door to sufficiency and abundance, and I think really that is the first step to becoming a deliberate creator, is recognizing that we are so much more than what we see with our five senses. We are so much more than what we're experiencing on this physical realm. And once we start tapping into that there is more out there, that there is so much more than what we see in our physical reality, because like you said, the physical reality gives us a limited amount. There's a piece of pie, and then that leads us to want to compete for our slice. But when we start realizing that this is just a boundless universe, this is just an unlimited universe of abundance, then we will start attuning our minds more to there is so much, there is enough to go around, and we will start pulling our thoughts away from lack and limitation. Does that make sense? So I really
absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up too, because as you know, Rebecca, I do coaching, and one of the things I do is I do one-on-one coaching with people, but I also do group coaching. And one of the classes that I just absolutely love, it is just so much fun to do, is I have an abundance principle coaching class, and it's 5 weeks of coaching. And I just started another class 2 weeks ago. Actually, this will be the second week of it. And I just love it, because what it is it really gets you in alignment. It really gets you to change your consciousness from lack to abundance. And it's just amazing what happens to me with every single one of my clients when they open up this valve, if you will, that in letting their abundance flow, our natural state of abundance. It's like we don't have to do anything to turn it on. We just have to get the lack out of the way.
and just this abundance flows. And literally, it is just amazing to me how people call me and email me and just say to me, you know, oh, my God, I just got a job promotion, or I just got a job offer making $30,000 more, or, you know, I just met the woman of my dreams. And I got a really funny email from a guy that just finished my last abundance class. He actually took it as a one-on-one because he preferred to do it that way instead of taking it as a group. And within 9 days of him starting this process, he called me and he's like, okay, I literally was in a place where he's a consultant. He's like, I was in a place where I had no idea where I was going to get my next consulting job. And literally within 9 days of starting this program, I've gotten 3 new consulting jobs that I'm basically set for the rest of the year as far as money is concerned. And he's like, and I went golfing. I played the best game of golf I've ever played. So he's just like going through his day and just like, you know, Homer Simpson with a donut, like, I mean, he's just so happy and joyful. And he emails me the other day, and it was just so cute, Rebecca. He says, how do you turn this valve off for abundance? He goes, you know, it's great because I just got another assignment that's a 9-month assignment, but the problem is it's going to, you know, cut into my baseball time. And he had a goal that he wanted to visit all the baseball diamonds this year. And then he said, and then I met 2 amazing women, and he goes, and I'm having a hard time. He goes, I'm usually like a one thing at a time kind of guy. And he's like, I've got so much abundance coming at me, I don't know what to do. And I'm like, just enjoy it, you know, just decipher what you want to do, and it's your choice. But it's just, it's so great because that's the truth of who we are. It's the truth of our world. I mean, you can just look at nature and see that that is the way God created the universe, that that is the way the universe is. I remember being in Italy, and we were in the Amalfi Coast, and we were going from on a boat ride from Capri back to Positano. And as literally as far as my eyes could see, it was just an amazing ocean. And you know that point where it's like all you see is ocean and then where the sky meets the ocean? Mm-hmm. And it was just that sense of, oh my God, I'm just so abundant. I mean, everywhere I could look was ocean, and that just gave me the sense of just being abundant. And then I looked up, and there was this beautiful blue sky with not a cloud in the sky, and it was just this beautiful, vast sky. You know, it's like everywhere there was abundance. You look at a tree with the abundance of leaves that it has, and that is the way that is the nature of our universe.
Exactly. That's a great story, Christy. That's actually a very great story, and I love the story of your guy. And just for any of the listeners out there, I know you said you were starting a new class. Your classes are amazing. And
oh,
so anybody who just can possibly get to your website and sign up for those, because your classes truly are amazing, and I think you are so gifted at being able to assist people in shifting their consciousness back to what is really the truth of who we are. You know, the Kabbalah talks about this physical reality that we see is the 1%. The 99% is really the true universe, the universe of abundance. It's sort of what you were talking about in Italy. It's that universe where we are just limitless. And so, you know, you are really such a master at getting people to step into the 99% and out of the limited 1% thinking. So really, any listeners out there who would want to experience more abundance in their life, oh my gosh, go to Christy's website. There is just nobody better.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
So sweet.
I mean that. I really, truly mean that.
I know you do. I feel that. I thank you for that.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I just feel so blessed. I really do feel so abundant and, you know, blessed in what I do. First of all, I was just blessed to have you in my life. But I, you know, beyond all that, it's like what I do as a career now. I mean, on a daily basis, I get to see people shift, and you know, and I appreciate you saying what you said. But it's like what we tied back in the beginning. It's like everybody has to take responsibility for themselves. And you know, there are some coaching clients that come to me and don't get those kind of results because they're not willing to take that responsibility. And that's what I want everybody to really get is that your outer reality, what you see as far as the material, you know, world or realm that you live in, whether it's a partner that you have or, you know, the clothes that you wear or the job that you have or the car you drive or just, you know, the amount of happiness that you have in your life, all of it is based on the relationship that you have inside with yourself. And it literally is a direct reflection. Your outer reality is a direct reflection of your relationship with yourself. And I, as a coach, or Rebecca, as an amazing therapist,
can assist in that process, but it's ultimately, and you know what I'm talking about, Rebecca, it's ultimately up to the client to take
yes.
that responsibility and to do that, to do that work.
Yes. And sometimes the work isn't easy, getting beyond that resistance and recognizing that you're responsible. I think that's what I see with a lot of people, is that resistance comes up because it really is kind of painful to realize that I've been creating this in my life. But if you can get beyond that resistance, you realize that then you are capable of creating wonders, just like with the guy you were talking about. If
yeah.
you realize that, you know, you've created this mess, ouch, that's
yeah.
never easy to,
yeah.
that's never easy to sit with, then you also are capable of realizing that you can create anything you desire. And that's part of our three, sort of the three keys that we talk about in our upcoming book. When you recognize what's there, you now are capable of releasing it, and then you get to reclaim all the wonders that reside within you that are part of your true nature. And that's what you were talking about, Christy, that you learn to have this amazing relationship with yourself. You know, you can, and from there, everything just seems to open up. So, Christy, if you were to, you know, tell the listeners maybe steps towards, steps they can do now in their lives to really begin the process of deliberate creating, is what would you say? I mean, what would you offer?
Well, I would say first and foremost, and, you know, is really get clear on what you want. And when you do that, it's, you know, that's the power of intention. That starts the whole entire creation process. But to really deliberately create is you want to make sure that your emotions and your feelings and your actions, everything is in alignment in the direction that you're going. And if you find yourself having emotions that are negative, and, you know, when I say a negative emotion, it doesn't mean they're bad emotions, but it means they're more of like a lower level emotion, like depression, anger, resentment, you know, blame, shame, guilt, you know, those type of, even boredom, you know, pessimism, those type of emotions. Ask yourself, what is it that I'm focused on? Or, you know, what am I thinking about? Because the manifestation process is thoughts lead to feelings, feelings lead to actions, and actions lead to results. So when you change the thoughts, when you change the feelings, you obviously have a different action and a different result that corresponds with it.
That's good.
Yeah, so when you can really get in touch with, and this is one very, very, very empowering thing that you can do, is what I recommend to my coaching clients, that is the thing is that everybody thinks that they're, not everybody, but most people that are just starting this type of work think that they're their minds. They think that the thoughts that they say to themselves are truths. And that's not true. We are body, we are mind, and we are spirit. And sometimes there's parts of our minds that are very healthy for us, and they lead us in the right direction. But then there's a part of us that we're conditioned. We're conditioned with unlimiting beliefs, unlimiting thoughts. And it's up to us to be the one that gets on, kind of like you were talking about, on top of that wave. You know, it's like getting in front of your mind to be able to say, whoa, you know what? The Buddhists call it becoming the witness. Becoming the witness to your thoughts. And one of the ways to do that is write yourself a couple sticky notes. You know, maybe put it in your car, put it in your office, put it in your daily planner, and write something like, what am I thinking? You know, what am I focused on? And just asking yourself that type of question will get you back into the present moment, and it'll get you thinking about what you're thinking about.
Well, it's like taking a little snapshot of your thoughts, getting in the habit of taking a snapshot. You know, just like when you're on vacation, you're taking, snapping a lot of pictures. And it's really starting to just take, I get what you're saying, Christy, it's getting in the habit of taking a snapshot of your thoughts so you can put that under a microscope and know what you're thinking, and from there you'll know what direction your emotions are going to be taking, and from there you're going to, you know, and what actions are going to come from that, and therefore what results. That was really good. That was a good four step. That was good.
But thank you. But it's just getting on top of, getting in front of your mind so that you're being the witness, so that when you're recognizing what those thoughts are, you're able to release it and you're able to change those thoughts, putting in a more affirmative, life-affirmative phrase in there. And that's why affirmations are wonderful. Affirmations are, I mean, any spiritual personal development author, coach, or, you know, a speaker will tell you affirmations work, and there's a reason, because it actually you cannot focus on two energies at the same time. Your mind, Marianne Williamson said this, you can't,
serve two masters.
Yes, thank you. The mind cannot serve two masters. So if you are focused in one direction, one energy, one way, and you are able to stop yourself and say, no, thank you, you know, cancel, basically that's the way to say it, is when you find yourself thinking a thought, say, cancel, and then put in a new thought, a more empowering thought. And one way it is doing that is, what do I want? When you notice you're focused on something that's giving you negative emotions, you're probably focused on something that you don't want. So if you can ask yourself this one question, what is it that I do want? Because that will get you in the direction of focusing on the positive things. Because obviously when we think about what we really want, we're going to be thinking about positive things. And then, you know, another question to ask is, why do I want it? Because then it even generates even more energy of, ooh, I want it because of this.
It generates,
or I want it because
the emotion.
Yeah.
The emotional component to that.
Exactly.
Yeah, I want it because, and then we start getting passionate and excited about that. And I really think it's the emotional component that ends up bringing us what we want.
Absolutely.
And I think the final thought on that is expectancy, creating a space. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day, a client, and I was saying to her, do you remember when you were pregnant? You had such an expectancy about this baby. You didn't stop and think in the third, fourth, fifth, sixth month, you know, I don't think it's really going to happen. Or I really wanted this baby, but I'm not sure it's going to come. There was a real sense, at least I remembered being pregnant, of I expected at the end of 9 months to be holding a baby. There was just faith. There was an expectancy that this baby would be coming. There was never a single doubt in my mind. And I think that many ways deliberately creating is like that. We set our intention, we focus on positive emotion, get passionate about that so it will, you know, come faster, but then we create a space of expectancy that this will be here. And we don't cancel our creation with doubt and fear and all of that. So I think those are probably three solid steps.
I'll just have to interject. I always have to put this in there because this is just a huge step, is the action. I mean, you couldn't just sit around and go, okay, I want to be pregnant. Ooh, it's going to feel good to be pregnant. You actually had to get on your back and get pregnant.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, people say that to me all the time. It's like, oh, okay, you know, I want a dream house, and using the secret, I'll be able to get that. Well, yeah, you know, get excited. Think about what you want. Write down what you want. Get in the place of expecting it and getting excited about it. But eventually you're going to have to leave your current house to go out and look for your house of your dreams, because I don't think that all of a sudden you're going to be meditating and the house you're living in is going to transform into this beautiful house. You have to actually take the action steps.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
That's an important part that most people think that, you know, and most people get held back from their fears into actually taking steps. And did you know, and I just learned this today from our friend James Malinchak, who's a wonderful man, that we are born with only two fears.
What are those?
The fear of loud noises and the fear of, what was the other thing? Oh, I just forgot it.
Huh.
It'll come back to me. The fear of loud noises and the fear of falling. The fear of falling.
Hmm.
And all the other fears are fears that we have learned and taken on and have basically, you know, accepted.
Right.
We've taken on from our parents to society, all that other stuff, all those other fears
right.
are conditioned.
But the good news is if we